Blog Talk Radio.
Just a little bit longer.
We built the LinkedIn Learning Hub to use powerful AI that turns insights from millions of professionals, jobs, and industries on LinkedIn into a personalized learning experience.
Yes. Thank you. I think it's about time. Oh. Sunday when Francis Albert is found.
Welcome to our shield.
Tonight on our shield, we really have one personality. Well, I would like to say that before we bring all these folks on stage here, there are celebrities in our audience that I would really like to get up here to you right about. Anyway, let's speak first, gentlemen, a great big hand, Mr. Jimmy Cackney. Jay?
Well, make it straight. Is that right? How about one of these with that player? Does that make me do it?
I will be up there.
audio up against the wall, sweetheart. That's it. And I want Chris Cooley to be a boss. I'd also like to say that I busted out of stairs. That would be the same straight. Somebody's been playing bunches on stand-up. I don't know if much a player. I don't know. You understand that? I want to come up with an iron head. You think that BB guy got a lot of iron head? Get nuts. Oh, my God, man. Stop talking.
Question whether what would they call that when you grow up in Tennessee?
Hello, me friends.
Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, is a very dear friend, and he is the star of the television series CPA or IRS or C something shocky. Mr. Don Rickles.
I'm not alone. so happy about the success of your show. I really am. You deserve it. It's a good show. Funny show. It's a funny show. Johnny Carson have all made shots at me and with fun and with love. And I'm delighted because I think we have a great group of kids.
I love the kids on the show.
The Ron and Dick Slattery, we've added as a flight captain. And the ladies came in this week, and it seems America is finding us and we're delighted.
I'm glad to see you. I think it's about time. Well, I'll tell you what's
good. The following people report for Elliot Brooklyn.
Shut up.
Ed McMahon, Andrew Dickinson, John Burns, Carol O'Connor, and my buddy, Dr. Nicholson, in the office. Come on, I. Come on, I'll be back. Doris Lee will be a guest. Arnold Schwartz and Hip Nager. Lyle experts, Chris and Shauna McBride. And for the Metropolitan Opera Company, Miss Judith Blagan. Thank you so much, everybody. Be sure to keep contact with Judith.
Everyone knows that Frank Sinatra will always be a legend. Ever since his heyday in the mid-20th century, Old Blue Eyes has captured the hearts of music lovers around the world. But few people realize just how tragic his life really was. This is the real-life story of Frank Sinatra. During his birth, Francis Albert Sinatra was almost ruled dead on arrival. Born on December 12, 1915, in the kitchen of his parents' New Jersey apartment, Sinatra weighed 13.5 pounds at birth and had to be removed from the womb with forceps. Frank was originally thought to be stillborn as he was blue and not breathing. While the doctor was treating his mother, Frank's grandmother took the seemingly dead infant, ran him under cold water, and slapped him on the back, which suddenly revived him. And the mishaps didn't end there. Frank was actually supposed to be given the first name Martin after his father, but a misunderstanding led the priest to baptize the baby after his godfather, Frankie Garrick. Frank's mother, probably a little exhausted by this point, decided to leave it alone and keep the name as it was. The forceps used during Frank's birth left him with a facial scarring on the left side of his face, neck, and jawline. This led him to receive the punishing nickname of Scarface from his peers in adolescence. During his singing career, Frank would endeavor to hide his facial imperfections with heavy makeup. In spite of his talent, Frank Sinatra actually had to grapple with loneliness during his childhood. Frank was the only child of Italian immigrants who were both very active and prominent in their Hoboken neighborhood. His father, Antonio Martino, or Marty, owned a local tavern and was a part-time prize fighter. Frank's mother, Dolly, was a midwife who often helped desperate women to obtain illegal abortions. Dolly was also involved in local politics and was elected Democratic ward leader in their neighborhood. His parents' work and activities meant they were often away, so young Frank was usually left on his own or with his grandmother. Most children in Frank's predominantly Italian neighborhood came from large families, while he grew up an only child, which was considered highly unusual at the time. In a later interview with journalist Pete Hamill, Sinatra admitted that he longed for a sibling when he was a child, saying, "I used to wish I had an older brother that could help me when I needed him. I wish I had a younger sister I could pretend." Sinatra didn't find it easy achieving the fame and success he craved when he was young. His parents weren't entirely supportive of his desire to be a professional singer, viewing it only as a hobby. Instead, Marty wanted his son to attend the Stevens Institute of Technology and have a steady job. However, once Dolly Sinatra understood her son's talent and ambition, she tried to help him wherever she could. From buying him sound equipment and sheet music to using her political connections to secure singing gigs for him. Dolly's pull even landed Frank a spot with the local singing group, the Hoboken Four, which started him on the path to professional recognition. It soon became obvious, however, that Sinatra was the only one of the group with genuine ambition and drive, and once the Hoboken Four broke up, Frank started to wait tables in between his singing gigs with local dance bands. After landing a solid gig with trumpeter Harry James, Frank's biggest break came in 1940 when he was discovered by renowned band leader Tommy Dorsey, who offered him a much more lucrative contract. By 1942, Sinatra's reputation even eclipsed Dorsey's, which prompted him to seek out a solo singing career. Bing Crosby was Frank Sinatra's greatest inspiration for becoming a professional singer. A huge fan of the celebrity crooner, the teenage Frank even had a picture of Crosby hanging in his bedroom. Crosby's warm, passionate, but laid-back singing technique was the foundation that Frank built on until he could develop his own unique style. Frank even met his idol briefly in 1935 at a Newark club, but they wouldn't meet again for nearly a decade when Frank was a huge star in his own right. By the time the 1940s rolled around, Crosby was still popular, but Sinatra's fame was skyrocketing. Bing had fans, but he was never greeted by the hordes of screaming, swooning teenage body boxer girls that made up Sinatra's fan base. Crosby took Frank's rising popularity in stride, however, once saying that Sinatra was a singer that comes around once in a lifetime, and jokingly added, or why did it have to be my lifetime? After that, a media-driven rivalry was born. The two competing crooners would frequently trade barbs and insults at each other on public radio broadcasts. The rivalry was played up for media attention, but it was never really serious. Later, they would perform duets together and co-star in movies, such as 1956's High Society. Frank Sinatra didn't mind a good-natured rivalry with Bing Crosby, but he felt highly intimidated by any new singers who could potentially knock him off the pedestal. In the early 1950s, singer Eddie Fisher was on the rise, and this caused Sinatra to spiral into a deep depression, believing that his career was over. Another time Sinatra's fame came under threat was from a singer named Jimmy Roselli, who was also known as, quote, the other Sinatra. Roselli was 10 years younger than Sinatra, an Italian-American, and grew up in the same neighborhood of Hoboken. Roselli was also incredibly popular with the Italian-American crowd, even with Frank Sinatra's friends and his own mother, Dolly. Roselli's voice had an even greater range than Sinatra's, too. When Dolly Sinatra asked Jimmy Roselli to perform at a benefit, but Roselli refused to sing without receiving a fee, Sinatra used this as an excuse to blackball Roselli's career. Although he always refuted it, Frank Sinatra absolutely had ties to the mob. In fact, Sinatra's FBI profile reads like a guidebook to the mafia. Sinatra was known to be good friends with the infamous Chicago mob boss, Sam Giancana, and his crew. He outwardly socialized with the Fischetti brothers, Joseph and Charles, who were known to conduct illegal gambling operations. He blatantly partied with Detroit mobsters Anthony and Vito Giacalone. If Sinatra ever needed to get out of a contract or was simply ticked off about a perceived insult, someone could expect to get a visit from a couple of goons, visits that might or might not end with violence. In return, Frank would often perform a few shows as favors for his mob buddies. For all of Sinatra's denials of his mafia ties, he didn't do much to conceal who his friends were or his participation in their preferred activities, namely gambling, women, and money.
I don't do those things to have anybody follow me. And doing that same thing is what I mean.
The FBI kept a close eye on Sinatra, but he was never charged criminally for his mob-related activities or associations. Sinatra's full FBI record wasn't released until after his death. Sinatra was an ardent supporter of the Democratic Party, most notably John F. Kennedy. It's unknown how the two officially met, but Kennedy's sister Pat was married to Sinatra's fellow Rat Packer Peter Lawford. Kennedy appreciated Sinatra's glamour and rule-breaking attitude, and Sinatra greatly admired the power that Kennedy represented. When JFK announced his bid for the presidency, Sinatra publicly endorsed his candidacy and avidly used his star power to generate votes. He organized donor dinners, appeared in political radio ads, and lent Kennedy aides his private jet. His hit song, High Hope, even became the theme song of the Kennedy campaign. It has been speculated that JFK's father, Joseph Kennedy, was hoping to use Sinatra's mob connections and union ties to bring in the votes. However, the Kennedy-Sinatra friendship crumbled shortly after the election, when an FBI wiretap revealed that Sinatra was having an affair with JFK's married sister, Pat. Sinatra made it clear on the recordings that he was only using Pat to influence her brothers and steer the government away from his gangster friend's activities, but the Kennedys agreed that Sinatra had to go. Despite all that romantic crooning, Frank Sinatra was known to have an extremely short fuse.
Do you think your boiling point is slow? Not anymore, it used to be.
Once during a show in Hong Kong, a missed light cue prompted him to destroy his dressing room and his hotel suite, breaking priceless antiques. Another time, while in a drunken rage, he drove a golf cart through a shopping mall window. J. Randy Taraborelli's biography, Sinatra, Behind the Legend, details how the singer once threw a plate of pasta at the wall in an Italian restaurant because he deemed it too soggy. Old Blue Eyes also had a habit of bullying venue employees and less famous entertainers and getting his mob friends to beat up people he didn't like. He seemed to have a particular dislike for stand-up comedians, probably due to his many insecurities and fears of being publicly humiliated. Comic Shecky Green once made a remark that angered Sinatra, and Green was later mobbed by a group of Sinatra's friends. Comedian Jackie Mason made a series of jokes about the much older Frank Sinatra's marriage to 21-year-old Mia Farrow, which resulted in the comic receiving anonymous death threats. When Mason refused to stop making Frank Sinatra jokes, shots were fired into his hotel room. He later had his nose and cheekbones broken by a complete stranger. Out of his three children, Frank Sinatra had one son, Frank Jr., who had ambitions to become a singer like his father. His career was already budding at the age of 19. However, Frank Jr. also started attracting more malicious attention. According to the FBI, on December 8, 1963, Sinatra Jr. was performing a gig at Harris Club Lodge in Lake Tahoe. He was in his dressing room as a friend when someone knocked on the door, claiming to have a package to deliver. Instead, two men entered, tied up and blindfolded the friend, and then forced the singer out a side door and into a waiting car. The friend was able to free himself and notify the police. The kidnappers contacted the elder Sinatra and demanded a ransom of $240,000 for his son's safe return. With the FBI's help, Sinatra Sr. paid the ransom and allowed the police to track down the kidnappers. After some trepidation on the part of the kidnappers, one of them eventually decided to free Sinatra Jr., whom the police found in Bel Air after he had been walking for miles. The FBI later apprehended the three kidnappers and recovered the ransom money. The kidnapper's defense tried to paint Sinatra Jr. as the perpetrator, claiming he masterminded his own abduction for publicity. The FBI's evidence proved contradictory to this claim, and all three kidnappers were convicted. Frank Sinatra died of a heart attack at the age of 82 on May 14, 1998, at Los Angeles' Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. His wife, Barbara Marks, and his three children were at his bedside. Sinatra's last remaining years were filled with significant health problems, such as heart and breathing problems, high blood pressure, pneumonia, and bladder cancer. He had also been diagnosed with dementia brought on by Alzheimer's. As the end approached, Sinatra seemed to recognize that his time had arrived, as his last words to his wife were, "I'm losing." Sinatra was buried with a pack of Camel cigarettes, a bottle of Jack Daniel's whiskey, a Zippo lighter, and a dollar's worth of dimes. In a Rolling Stone interview, singer Bono of U2 spoke on the death of Sinatra, with whom he once performed a duet, and the loss of an iconic performer. He said, "Frank Sinatra was the 20th century. He was modern. He was complex. He had swing and he had attitude. He was the boss, but he was always Frank Sinatra. We won't see his like again." Check out one of our newest videos right here. Plus, even more grunge videos about your favorite stuff are coming soon. Subscribe to our YouTube channel and hit the bell so you don't miss a single one.
Let's explore a new solution.
And then they're gone.
Oh,
people dropping that low IQ. Slow down the writing.
Grammarly helps her be concise, so her point makes an impact.
92% of professionals who use Grammarly say it helps save them time.
What makes Grammarly such an intelligent writing tool is that it's powered by billions of user interactions. Try Grammarly for free today. It's the blue button. Right there.
We go. pages for me.
Thank you.
small businesses need to create a tax strategy, not just file their taxes. I'm going to show you how our clients are saving an average of $30,000 a year in taxes. It would take an investment of nearly $450,000 earning 7% interest to net that return in a single year. And you're taking all the risk. 80 to 90% of small businesses are overpaying.
You can do it.
Early 21st century, this Canadian artist has reinvented herself time and time again.
One way. Not all right. Financial future with Oxford Gold Group. Investing in precious metals like gold and silver can provide you with the peace of mind that you can't find in today's unpredictable stock market. Whether you're a mortgage buyer, a collector, or a seasoned investor, Oxford Gold Group will create a personalized plan and will guide you through every step of the way. So, what are you waiting for? Invest in gold and silver today.